97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the trial involving Adidas funneling basketball stars to specific universities. Our guest, Rick Johnson, an attorney in Cleveland. He's also a college athlete rights advocate and commentator, as well as a leading legal authority on the NCAA. Rick, at the end of October, three men were convicted in this case of wire fraud. You say that decision is a threat to us all. Why should we care what happens to those who flagrantly break the rules?
Why we should care is that violation was a violation of an NCAA amateurism rule that says we don't pay the kids, we only pay the coaches and the schools. And so a private association, which is what the NCAA is, has this rule that they vote on in Indianapolis. And the United States Attorney in New York has now taken that private association rule and turned it into a felony. And if you think about the number of organizations that we all belong in, whether it's a Boy Scouts or it's a soccer league on Saturdays, or it's your homeowners or condominium association, all of these associations that we belong to in our daily lives have bylaws. And you could violate one of these bylaws, and if for political reasons, if somebody doesn't like you, they could walk down to the U.S. Attorney's office and say, look at this person. They violated, you know, an example I gave was most homeowners associations have a rule on what color house you can have. And I gave the example that you can have shades of brown paint, and somebody wants to paint their house pink, and that violates the bylaws. And Glidden Paint wants to come in and say, we got the new hot pink, and they pay you $100,000 to paint your house pink. You could be indicted for wire fraud under the theory they used in the Gatto trial if you took money to have your house painted pink and it violated your homeowners association bylaws. That's just insane. Nobody thinks they could go to prison, you know, be convicted of a federal felony, fined, and go to prison for violating any of their homeowners association bylaws. And as I said, the number of examples expands when you think of the number of different types of organizations we all belong to and as part of our daily lives.
All right. So the defense attorneys argued, stated from the beginning, our clients broke NC2A rules, but they didn't break any laws. Is it as simple as that? Does it come down to that?
It is that simple, but they weren't simple enough. The prosecutor is trying to shoehorn all of this into a wire fraud violation. There is a statute that criminalizes the wire fraud, which is transmitting money through the mails or wires or taking other acts and so on. So they're trying to, when they say it doesn't break a law, what they really need to say is, what conduct did we do that breaks any law? Because the prosecutor says, well, I'm going to shoehorn this in and call it wire fraud. Show me why it's not. And here's why it's not, is that Adidas had no duty to the university or to the NCAA. And the basic charge is that Adidas and its agents basically forced the universities to give grants and aid, which are euphemistically called athletic scholarships, to these kids. And Adidas and its agents made no representations ever to the NCAA or the universities, and they withheld nothing that they were required to tell them. So unless you affirmatively lie or you have a duty to affirmatively tell somebody something and you don't tell it to them, you cannot, by definition, commit fraud. This fraud is either an overtly false statement or a failure to disclose a material condition when you're under a duty to do so. And so they don't have the first step of the ladder that's a duty to do something. And that's what the defense lawyers didn't hammer on, is that this house of cards is built on just overlooking the fact the first step on the ladder, there's no step. So you step on it, you should fall off. And instead, it just kept going.
Well, certainly this will get appealed. And it will be appealed on what grounds?
It will be appealed on, I assume, several grounds. But the bottom line is this goes from the federal district court to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers New York. And they will appeal that basically, if you assume all the conduct is true, it doesn't violate any federal laws. And the Federal Court of Appeals should, based upon, there's only been one case on this before, which came out of Chicago, which is the Seventh Circuit, where the person was indicted and pled guilty on what's called an Alford plea, which is where you say, hey, it's kind of like no contest. If this is illegal, then I did it, but I don't think it's illegal. And so he went up to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals said basically the NSA is a cartel, and cheating a cartel is not a crime. And it's actually economically efficient to cheat a cartel because cartels raise prices, or in this case, lower the prices for athletic talent. So right now the NCAA sets the value of an athlete's compensation at zero. And all these kids are doing through a bunch of lower level, somewhat scummy characters, are they're cheating on the rule of whether they can get paid or not. If you say the kid's worth zero and you got somebody like the Zion guy at Duke now, I mean, that kid's worth millions of dollars and everybody knows it. And supposedly he's on the tapes or his mom's on the tapes or something. I don't know, but they're letting him play, but they're making the kid at Kansas sit out. I mean, how's that fair?
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about the Adidas trial, what some people have called the Gatto trial, one of the men convicted of fraud in this case. And we're talking with Rick Johnson, an attorney in Cleveland. Rick, I always try to see both sides. All right. I can definitely see, how can you convict somebody of a crime when there's no statute involved? But the other part of me, as a sports fan, it's like, I hate this kind of stuff, this underbelly of college athletics and how the whole system is run. So I'd say put these guys, out of the system. So how does the average fan rectify these two competing emotions, if you will?
Well, rectifying emotions, is what causes sports arguments. But you just have to ask yourself, do you want to be randomly accused, arrested, and convicted for a crime that no one has said is a crime before? And nobody has said cheating is a crime. People cheat all the time. So, for instance, people cheat at cards.
I never do, by the way.
Well, people are known to have done such things. If you go to a casino and cheat, any state that has a casino has a gambling law that makes it a felony to cheat at cards at a casino. Everybody going into a casino knows that if they cheat, they can be labeled criminals. On the other hand, if they go over to their buddy's house on a Friday night or a Thursday night and play cards, none of them expects to be arrested if they cheat. They may not be invited back. So I think what sports fans have to understand is that you don't have to say cheating is good nobody who's fair likes cheaters. And so you don't have to like these people. And the normal human response is you don't socialize with people who cheat because you can't trust them. But do you take it to the next step where you say, we want to put these people in federal prison because they cheated? Now, if you're use the gambling example. If you're at your buddy's house doing it, nobody at the table thinks that's going to happen. If you're in a casino, everybody thinks that'll happen. So what's fair is what people expect. And if your state or the federal government passes a law that says it's illegal to cheat at cards at somebody's house in a private area, then everybody would be on notice that you can't do that. But there aren't any such laws that I'm aware of. There are laws that say if you go into the casino and cheat, we'll put you in jail. A lot of this has to go, to do with notice. And if we as a society want to say giving money to college athletes is a criminal enterprise that should result in incarceration, then pass a law that says that. That's the answer. If you don't like that, pass a law that says you can't do it. And the fact of the matter is, 3/4 of the states have passed a what's called a Uniform Athlete Agent Act that attempts to regulate agents doing business with college athletes. And there's a federal statute that's similar. It's not like the states haven't looked at this before, but nobody's made this a federal felony.
All right. So, reading the stuff that you've written. I take it you're not a big Rick Pitino fan and are under the belief, I think, and many people share that belief, that these coaches who know what's going on, they say they don't, but, we think that they do, are really the only people who are profiting from this. And I guess by extension, the universities themselves are profiting.
Well, it's astonishing with Rick Pitino. The contract with Adidas from 2013 to 2017, he apparently got 98% of the money. Over $1.5 million every single year of his compensation was a personal service contract with Adidas. So I got a little bit of a problem when they're throwing 10, 20, 30, even 100 grand at these kids from Adidas. And who's making most of the money out there? Rick Pitino is making more money from Adidas than anybody else as a coach or as a college player. And there may be professional athletes who make more on endorsements. But at the college level, the only person who's making big money is Rick Pitino. And they're going to act like this is such some horrible thing. And they got plenty of texts and plenty of voicemails and plenty of information that if this was such an awful thing, they could have indicted him. But they didn't.
So why didn't they?
Don't know. I really don't know. When the prosecutor issued his press release on this, touting his conviction of these three guys, he starts off saying how this tarnished the image of college sports worldwide. Don't you think that when Rick Pitino and his coaches bought prostitutes for the players and recruits, that kind of tarnished the image of college sports? And that's not a criminal standard. The fact that we may have tarnished the image of something doesn't create criminal liability. But that's what this prosecutor said, as if he's romanticizing college sports as some sort of virgin territory where everyone does only the best thing on earth. And what it is it's a cesspool. When you get up to the dollar figures involved in Louisville, this is not college sports. This is a business. And what they've said is, we're not going to let the labor earn any money. And labor generally doesn't like that. That's what you see happening, is you see a leaky system where the system is trying to keep the money from the kids. And the kids are saying, we want some too. And they're getting it. And you see that with Reebok creating a position for one of the incoming players, with a historically black league coming online, with the G League offering larger salaries, what you're seeing is the market is responding to the reality that the college players need to get paid. And they're creating different avenues where players next year and the year after are going to be paid, above the table. But paying people below the table is not illegal.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with a sports attorney, or a sports expert, if you will, Rick Johnson. And we're talking about the trial involving Adidas and basketball stars going to specific universities. So, Rick, when the point that you made in the last segment, being paid above the table is so much more palatable, if you will, to fans than being paid below the table. The NCAA knows these below-the-table payments are going on and yet is very resistant to above-the-table payments. Why?
Because the model they've created is a monopoly that they can control, where they say labor gets paid zero. What happens because of that is, you know, in a professional league, in the NBA, I think 53-54% of gross revenues goes to the players. In college basketball, zero goes to the players. So the reason you have instances like UK's and Louisville's coaches earning the dollars that they do, and in football, similar, where these coaches are being paid multiples of what a professional coach would be paid. So like in Cleveland, where I am, the Cavaliers coach earns maybe $2.5 million a year. That's squat to somebody like Rick Pitino. The only way they can pay these coaches the salaries they do is because they don't have any player labor costs. And so the system, the way the system has grown to be, there is so much money at the trough that would not be there if they paid the players, that the entrenched interests are very happy having it the way it is. And it's the athletic directors and the coaches that control this stuff. That's who goes to the NCAA conventions, is the athletic directors. And they don't want this to change because they're earning a ton of money. I mean, why should a college athletic director earn seven figures? Why should a college basketball coach earn seven figures? I mean, in almost every state, the highest paid person is the football or basketball coach for the state university. Why should that ever be? And it can't be if you actually pay the people who earn the money. And the people that earn the money are the players.
All right, so let's get back to this particular case, because we could talk about, you know, whether players should be paid for a blue moon and never come to a conclusion. This case sets up what in terms of, as you've already alluded to, criminalizing things that there's no statute for, but even beyond that, what does this case set us up for?
Well, it sets us up for being held criminally liable without any notice, which is a fundamental tenet of how our society is structured. And it's been that way since our country was founded. All crimes are by statute. There are no common law crimes in the United States. So unless you have a statute that says it's against the law for Charlie to walk across the street here, then it's not against the law. It's just that simple. They don't have a law that says any of this stuff is illegal. If they want a law, go to your General Assembly of your state, North Carolina, or to Congress, and have a law passed. But you know what? It's pretty hard to pass a law. If they could pass a law saying you shouldn't pay college kids, they would have. How are you going to get that passed? Because as soon as you start trying to pass that, then you're going to have to talk about the percentage of blacks that play on these teams. In Power 5, 55% of football and 56% of basketball players are black. So, you know, if you want to talk about not paying these people, talk about who's actually earning the money that's not getting it, and all of a sudden you got a big race issue. And it's a very real one, because the percentage of blacks on campus is under 3%. So, you know, these teams are huge profit centers for a population that largely doesn't benefit from the university.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Rick Johnson. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.